Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today we are going to take a look at some of the bigger remaining transits of the month. It can easily be forgotten how many transits there are in the month of April since we've been focused on Jupiter and Uranus and the solar eclipse. Those two really, you know, they took the spotlight this month, but we have a number of transits still coming up that I'd like to talk about, including a big full moon. And I'm probably going to do individual coverage on a lot of these transits separately in separate videos coming up. But I thought, you know what, let's regroup today after Jupiter Uranus coverage and let's look at what transits are yet to come this month. And then we will probably do some individual coverage of those archetypal combinations as we go. So anyway, that's the goal for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments and reflections. And we'd love to hear from you if you have stories about any of these big transits. Use the hashtag grabbed or email us your story. Grabbed at nightlightastrology.com. You can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. Couple of things to point you over to. The Herbal Apprenticeship starts April 24th. That is this week. So we are really excited to be promoting Ashley's new Herbal Apprenticeship program. If you haven't yet checked it out, you can go over to her website, which is skyhouseherbs.com. Ashley is a regular contributor on the channel when it comes to herbs and astrology, our Roots and Spheres program. So you can check out the upcoming Herbal Foundations Apprenticeship, which starts April 24th this week. That's promo number one. Promo number two, if you go over to nightlightastrology.com, we have our monthly series. If you go to events, go to live talks. The next event we will be promoting is in the month of May. We just did Uranus in Love. If you missed the Uranus in Love talk or Neptune or Pluto in Love over the past couple of months, head over to the Nightlight Astrology website, go to the shop page. You can pick up a recording of those talks that you missed. May 16th, I'm doing a talk on Neptune's entrance into Aries. Neptune is culminating at the 29th degree. It'll turn retrograde, so we're not getting its entrance into Aries just yet, but we're going to sneak preview the archetypal meaning of Neptune in Aries this May. And then in June, we're going to take an in-depth look at the 12th house and the healing potential in your birth chart through an understanding of your 12th house. Then we're going to look at Uranus and Gemini, the other big outer planetary movement that's happening in the next year. And that'll be in July. The other thing, of course, that we're promoting is the first year program, second year program, and horary programs all start again in June. Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic is my one-year course in ancient Hellenistic astrology. It has a modern archetypal psychological twist. I'm kind of a fusion of both types of astrology in the way that I practice. It starts on June 16th. You can learn more about the program on the course page after the end of today's talk. If you stick around, you can hear me going into greater depth and detail. The sale, we need to adjust this. We made a little mistake on the sale date. The sale date is available till May 15th. So you have until May 15th to take advantage of the early bird sale. The early bird installment plan is also going to save you on the tuition. The tuition payment plan. So usually those are going to be after May 15th. The prices will go up. So you can save now. And then tuition assistance is there. If you need any help to make the class possible, use the need-based tuition assistance. When you do, you tell us about your situation. You're going to select a number that you can do within a range, and then we give you a payment plan, and we work with you on the payment plan that you select. So it's very flexible pricing, meant to be sure that nobody is priced out, especially people who might be on a fixed income. We understand that we don't want people to live outside their means, but we also want a sacred topic like astrology to be accessible. Okay, so those are the promotions for the day. Let us move now into are looking at these remaining transits. All right, so here we are today, April 21st. And we had, it was a significant weekend with Jupiter conjoining Uranus and the Sun squaring Pluto. Here's what's coming up this week. I'm going to put up the real-time clock so that I can feature these. And this is the preview, right? This is where things are going. But the biggest transit we're going to be discussing this week, and we will probably discuss it. Definitely we'll be discussing it tomorrow. Sorry, I'm just looking at the date and realizing that I got it. I thought it was Wednesday. I got it messed up. It's Tuesday. So here is the full moon in Scorpio. Now, this full moon in Scorpio is not your average full moon. because first of all, full moons in Scorpio can be quite intense, but this full moon in Scorpio is also coming off from, or yeah, just coming off from a square to Pluto. So we have a little T square here, which means we have a little cycle of squares. We have several parts or sides of the square. The square in the chart goes over to Leo, right? And then it comes back over to Taurus. So that's the square. It's the shape that's made between whole sign houses that see one another in the wheel. So a T-square between the full moon in Scorpio, Pluto, and the sun. This is happening. You have to take into consideration, this is happening within the 3-degree engagement range of Jupiter separating from Uranus. So ancient astrologers paid very close attention to this 3-degree range of separation, which means that as the planet is moving to within 3 degrees and as the planet is separating within 3 degrees, the events promised by the planetary conjunction in this case start to manifest. It's sort of like saying, you know, it's not like the cherry blossoms in DC, which were a huge draw. They drew tons of people out to see them because they blossom magnificently right along the river by the monuments and everything. And Ashley and I used to go and we take the kids and they would blossom just magnificently, but only for like a couple of days, if I remember, or maybe like 4 or 5 days. They would, so, but you didn't know exactly which day it was going to happen on. You knew it was within a certain range of time. That's how aspects work. If you say, will something happen on the day of an eclipse? No, it happens in the umbrella of the eclipse, which can be pretty wide considering that eclipses recur in the same signs for a year and a half sometimes, right? So same thing with full moon. You get full moon effects on the day of, the day after. Same thing with the big transit from slow moving planets within 3 degrees applying, separating, the cherry blossoms show themselves. The reason that it's very important to thus consider this full moon is that the full moon, which itself is a moment of cherry blossoming, it is a moment of great manifestation. The full moon is happening within, you know, just like less than a degree, about half a degree of separation from Jupiter and Uranus. So the potential for some of the promised events of Jupiter and Uranus to actually manifest under the full moon are quite powerful. Not for everyone. Some people might have had a crazy weekend, you know? And some people, remember we said Jupiter Uranus, you may not see it for over the course of the next months. But the point is that this is another very powerful moment of astrological or karmic fruiting with the full moon in Scorpio, a T square to Pluto, right? And then we're seeing Jupiter and Uranus still just separating within a degree. So we are going to be talking about that astrological event tomorrow. I'm going to be going into greater detail, but the point today is to not just tell you about the full moon, but to show you everything that's still coming. Because again, Jupiter-Uranus conjoined, hooray, it's over. That's not how astrology works. You know what I mean? Like, no. I wish it was that simple. But we do have more transits that come, and those that come while Jupiter-Uranus are still separating are quite important. Just a couple of days later, this week, Mercury will turn direct. Now, Mercury stationing to turn direct is obviously having appeared as the morning star. We're now getting the recovery signatures of Mercury, which means that things that have been reversed, delayed, set back, deconstructed will start to reconstruct. The delay will be over. The revision is complete. And so another very powerful moment, considering that Mercury's retrograde was happening right through the middle of so many powerful events this month in Aries, including the solar eclipse in Aries. So a big Mercury retrograde turning direct. Another thing that's still happening before the end of this month is Mars is going to conjoin Neptune. Now, Mars is the recent ruler of the eclipse and is conjoining Neptune as Venus culminates in the sign of Aries. And as Mercury's just turning direct, pretty close to Chiron and the North Node. So this signature of Mars and Neptune, having been the recent ruler of the eclipse, having gone through the conjunction with Saturn, now going through the conjunction with Neptune, and then moving into Aries, its own rulership, that transition is a really significant event, astrologically speaking, because of the weight that it holds in the recent eclipse. The eclipse ruler and the degrees and spaces of the eclipse are like very sensitive points for a little while. So this will be these transits will be felt by most of you guys. And that's the point. Just kind of reminding us of what we're still dealing with. Now, this on April 28th is not for it's a little ways out, but it's coming up. So and then, you know, Mars will move into Aries right by the end of the month, by about the 30th. The other thing that happens on the 29th, if we back this up just a day, is Venus will enter Taurus. And now we're starting to move into a space where Venus's dignity is significantly better. Now, Venus, being the ruler of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, is now going to start bringing more of the pleasing or pleasant results of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, more of the favorable, good, fortunate results, less of the conflict involved with the revolution, you might say. Less of the bloodshed and, you know, and less of the chaos or destructiveness that comes with revolution, more of the peaceful unfolding, because Venus is moving from Aries, where she's ruled the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, into Taurus, where she's in her own rulership and a stable Earth sign. We're also getting Mars into his own sign out of a more tumultuous double-bodied water sign. These are improvements in planetary dignities. Mercury's turning direct. All of this is really important. Venus is protected from combustion, by the way, in Taurus by virtue of being in her own domicile. It's called being in your own chariot. So, you know, just some improvements in planetary dignities that, quite frankly, are starting to change the narrative. One thing that happens right away for Venus that might be a little bit challenging is Venus, right around April 30th into May 1st, is going to hit a square to Pluto. So I like that Venus is in her own rulership, Pluto stationing to turn direct, retrograde. And so the square from Venus to Pluto happening right as Pluto turns retrograde, that's fascinating. It seems to signify some moment of culmination or completion based on the you know, last couple of months of Pluto in Aquarius and the kinds of activities that Pluto in Aquarius has been initiating in recent months. Coming to some kind of meaningful chapter change as it turns retrograde and immediately hits, you know, Venus and Taurus hits a square to Pluto as it's turning retrograde. We're going to visit that too. The Venus-Pluto square is something we'll spend exclusive time with. So these are all little interesting things that are coming up. And then if there's any reason to believe that the cycles ahead are going to be easier, a little less tumultuous, look, here we are at the same time. We're in the last quarter square of the moon on May 1st as Venus squares Pluto. And now the cycle that was the eclipse cycle is starting to fade. And then we're going into the next new moon cycle. And look at this new moon. My gosh. So nice. I really like this one. I'm not saying that you can find shadows in any astrological placement, right? But I'm really optimistic about this one. You've got a new moon in Taurus, the exalted moon, obviously. You've got Venus protected from combustion in her own chariot, in her own sign. So you've got the two, you know, sort of benefic, well-dignified planets in the new moon signature. Jupiter and Uranus is just hitting the 3-degree separation moment. It's sort of like this beautiful expression of the fulfillment or completion of the Jupiter-Uranus cycle as the signature for the entirety of the next moon cycle. And you really have this feeling of like, what was this revolution about? You know, why were there frustrations? Why were there losses? Why were there, you know, value conflicts? Why were there difficulties that we had to work through? It was so a revolution could occur. You know, it was so we could have this breakthrough. And now we're ready to start, things are ready to start stabilizing a bit. We're starting to taste the fruit of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. That's my most optimistic take. So a really nice new moon on May 7th that sort of caps off the last part of the eclipse cycle and the last part of Jupiter-Uranus. After that, I want to say that one of the things I'm really excited to start talking about is, and you're going to see me do a bunch of coverage on this, once we get Jupiter, by about the middle of May, we get Jupiter to the last 3 degrees of Taurus. We're going to see this really intense flurry of activity where the Sun conjoins Uranus and then Venus conjoins Uranus, right? Like that. And then Venus conjoins Jupiter. Look at this. Venus conjoins Jupiter at the very end of Taurus, enters Gemini, and then right away, Jupiter enters Gemini. So you got both benefics entering Gemini at the same time. Not long after that, we'll have the synodic reset of Venus at the heart of the Sun. on June 2nd. You get kind of an interesting Mercury-Uranus dynamic in Taurus around the end of May. So there's still like, and I would say one of the most magical moon cycles of the year, if you want to look forward even just a little bit more, check this one out. This is right around June 5th. You've got the just recent synodic reset of Venus at the heart of the sun. You've got a new moon in Gemini with Mercury and Jupiter conjoining in Gemini. So the domicile ruler of Gemini is present. I mean, what a fantastic signature. You know, that's a really magical moon cycle as well. It's interesting to see that some of that moon cycle will also play on the square to Saturn in Pisces. But I just feel like those two signs combined, they're very, it's a little magic and mischief signature around that new moon cycle. Anyway, these are the things that I'm looking forward to. The fun is not over just because Jupiter and Uranus have conjoined. It's like, okay, well, pack it in. No, I mean, we have to remember that these are all the planets exist in community. And when one event is taking place and we give it a 3-degree separation range, we're still in. It's sort of like, think about this metaphorically. It's like right now, if the Jupiter Uranus were like a full moon, we're an hour after the full moon or something, 3 hours after the full moon, we're still sitting under the aura of a very big astrological event with many other planets connected to that event still having lots to say in the next several weeks. So today I just wanted to kind of highlight that, tell you where we're going, what we're going to be looking at, starting with that full moon in Scorpio tomorrow. All right, that's it for now. Stick around because I want to invite you guys to come and study astrology. I feel like there's truly not a better moment than, you know, Pluto in Aquarius, Jupiter Uranus conjoining, Jupiter going into Mercury's sign. Remember, Hermes, Mercury was the ruler of ancient astrology. There's some really nice signatures for bringing the philosophy and spirituality of astrology into your life at a deeper level and studying. Learn more about the course after I sign off. Remember that we have new pricing structures that are a little bit easier to use. So when you go to sign up using need-based tuition, you're going to tell us what you can afford within a range, and we're going to match you with the plan, and then you can sign up, which is really super. Just made it a little bit more streamlined. So anyway, feel free to use that. We like to make sure, again, that nobody's priced out, but also use the sales. If you can afford our prices, we ask that you use those sales while they last. They're up until May 15th. All right, that's it. Hope you guys are having a good one. We'll see you again soon. Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends. But if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central, or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. during the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play it. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, pertain to your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session. And then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place. what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology being bereft of its ancient textual tradition has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.